Lecture 6, The Legend of Troy.
This is a lecture that's devoted to the Legend of Troy, as I like to call it. And one might wonder at first, what does it have to do with civilizations in Asia Minor? In the last lecture, I discussed the collapse of civilization in the Aegean world, and earlier I had also mentioned how civilization on the plateau of Asia Minor had collapsed at the end of the Bronze Age. And in terms of long-term impact, perhaps one of the most important legacies that came out of that Bronze Age collapse, even if you remember nothing else, is the fact that the first monuments of Western European literature were inspired by events at the end of the Bronze Age. And ironically, apparently a rather remote and unknown event at the time, one of little consequence, which may well have pitted an ally of the Hittite Empire against a coalition of Greek, early Greek brigand princes, wanoxes, lords, whatever, which was dimly remembered for 400 years after the event. By most of the world, but the Greeks remembered as somehow a great national event. And that gave rise to a cycle of legends and poems, among them the Iliad and the Odyssey, which were composed probably about 750 BC, 700 BC, in the form we have them today. And I always like to believe that Homer, a poet who was remembered as a blind poet from Smyrna, modern Izmir, might well have dictated his poems to someone who wrote them down. And the poems of the Iliad and the Odyssey cannot be exaggerated in terms of their importance for Greek society. In many ways, it's the best way to enter Greek civilization, and they were the most popularly read works in the ancient world. A good index of that is from Roman Egypt, where we have numerous Greek papyri that have come down to us, mostly old discarded copies. Somewhere between 25% and a third are simply more than old copies of the Iliad or the Odyssey. They acted for the Greeks in many ways as the Bible would act for Jews and Christians, or the Quran for Muslims. And in that sense, it's important to look at what the background is that gave rise to these epics. In addition, more pertinent to the course that we're dealing with, the historical background on the Iliad and the Odyssey does reveal a great deal about the interaction between the earliest Greeks and the peoples of Asia Minor, particularly vassals and lords of the Hittite emperor. And I'd like to concentrate on that point as well. And so what I wish to do in this lecture, and in effect looked at three related issues. One is, how did the poems come down to us? Why are they so do they come down to us in the form we have them now? What was the background that led to the inspiration of those poems? And then to look at what were the consequences of writing these poems down? How did they define this Greek civilization I mentioned last time that was to be so unique and yet so important in dictating the destinies of the Aegean world and of Asia Minor? And that's a tall order, but I think we can hit some of the important high points of those three big questions. Well, as to the recording and the transmission of these epics, you have to remember that these poems don't represent anything like history. As I mentioned last time, they have vague memories of a heroic past set in a Bronze Age, which the Greeks themselves knew very little about. And yet embedded in the poems are events, are descriptions, objects in some instances that are clearly from the Bronze Age. In some instances, words and objects which the Greeks themselves in the Classical Age didn't really understand. And you might want to wonder, how did they remember events in this remote town in northwestern Turkey today? How did they remember that there was some sort of war siege, these heroes of Helen of Troy, Agamemnon, Paris, who abducted Helen, this whole cycle of legends associated with the city? Well, Homer based his poetry on what we call now oral poetic techniques. The ancient Greek language was both quantitative and pitch and orientation. That is, unlike most modern languages in Western Europe, including modern Greek, a long vowel took twice as long to say as a short vowel. It was a language based on pitch rather than on stress, which is what English would do. One stresses or betonen, as you would say in German, a syllable to give it emphasis. In Greek, in classical Greek, in early Greek, it was apparently a pitch quality that would be similar to the type of tones you would encounter in, say, modern Chinese.